In this episode, we speak with the founder and CEO of Pendo, Todd Olson. Pendo's software product experience platform allows companies to make product intelligence actionable with speed and scale, giving rise to a new generation of companies that put product at the center of everything. A three-time entrepreneur, Olson teamed up with fellow product leaders and technologists from Red Hat, Cisco, and Google to launch Pendo in October 2013. Its customers include the world's leading companies, including Verizon, Morgan Stanley, LabCorp, OpenTable, Okta, Salesforce, and Zendesk. Todd's passion for helping digital teams build great products led him to write his first book, The Product-Led Organization: Drive Growth by Putting Product at the Center of Your Customer Experience. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Todd, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. It's a delight to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to be with you too, RJ.
Noticed you went to Carnegie Mellon, one of my favorite schools. My wife went there. I've met a ton of talented people from there. A lot of founders have come out of Carnegie Mellon. One question that popped into my head was, and we've been interviewing quite a few entrepreneurs from MIT, and Carnegie Mellon has a similar profile in that it produces highly technical engineers and people. What do you think it is about that environment that kind of equips it to produce founders and entrepreneurs? Do you think it does enough of it? Like Stanford is known for producing a ton of entrepreneurs. Do you think Carnegie Mellon does enough to promote entrepreneurship?
I guess a couple things. One, the first question was it due to like generate such amazing technical talent and people solving hard problems? I think the culture and even the classwork and the research and the focus is around solving hard problems. And I think like a lot of the work that I had as a kind of ECECS focused individual was like interesting project work that was like not run of the mill. And you're always challenged to create differentiated solutions, challenging solutions. And there's a pretty heavy emphasis on building. And I think about what is one of the core tenets of entrepreneurship is building, and people to go to Carnegie Mellon are builders. I build a ton of stuff. On average, I would leave a computer lab at like 2 or 3 in the morning every day of my life. So you also have this culture of just incredibly hard work. You know, I'd sleep a handful of hours a night, go back to the labs the next day, or classes then labs, you know, whatever it may be. But honestly, I loved it. I don't look back at college as some negative experience. I loved every second of it. So I think that's the first piece. The second piece around entrepreneurship. Actually, I do have an entrepreneurship management sort of like certificate from the business school. And that was a newer course back then. This is just for context, very late 90s, probably early 2000s. I do have an entrepreneurship center on CMU, but just look, it's in Pittsburgh. It's not, you know, drop center Silicon Valley. It's probably not as easy to either go meet founders and or network with founders or do internships with other founders like as it is in the Bay Area. I think Stanford, which helped create some of that environment, but now benefits from it. It's just smack dab in the middle of all of those startups and entrepreneurial communities, the venture capital communities there. I mean, you know, one of the challenges in Pittsburgh, and I started my first company there, was access to capital was very, very limited. And it's still limited today. And despite the amazing talent coming out of CMU, look, I have a fondness in my heart for Pittsburgh and the CMU community. I think it's a wonderful place. My co-founder here, one of my co-founders is a CMU alum as well. We met in college. So yeah, fantastic place.
Awesome. So Pendo, I would love to dig in because it seems like it provides a lot of different types of solutions. And it touches a lot of different companies. It serves a lot of different companies and customers. What's the best way to kind of highlight to our audience the value of Pendo?
Look, if we step back, we created the company because we realized the importance of user experiences and software experiences. You know, like how you experience you being a user, metaphorically, or any user, how you experience a digital application really impacts your perspective on the brand and whether you're getting value out of that company and their product offerings. So our mission is to improve society's experiences with software. And in a world where software is dominating the way we interact with these companies, I think people need a broad platform to do that. Now, as we built the business, as you said, we have grown the products that we offer because, you know, we started with things like product analytics, giving you really deep quantitative information on how people are using software. But then we realized over time when working with customers that getting good qualitative information, you know, actually everything from asking them what they feel to having them vote on what they want to see to even them now watching what they're doing gives you a level of insight that helps you improve that experience. But then also, we've also had this idea that day one, we don't just want to arm you a bunch of insights. Like me telling you you're great or not great doesn't actually drive outcomes. What we want to do is help empower you to drive outcomes for your business. So we've included a messaging platform alongside that to affect the user experience, to educate new users, to onboard them more effectively. And that when we think about our market, that's sort of how our product solutions have evolved. Now, to your other part of your question, we serve 10-person companies to the largest companies in the world globally. Right? And it's a pretty awesome challenge. And you know, because obviously serving a very horizontal set of customers is hard. It's across every industry. And that's really more of a function of the fact that every industry has become a software company, more so than anything specific to Pendo. We're just riding that trend. We didn't invent that trend. But as that trend continues to gain momentum, it's also fueling a lot of our growth as well.
But would there be a good example of perhaps more of a traditional company, could be a known company that's now transforming into or incorporating more software into their company and then using Pendo in a variety of ways?
Oh, yeah. Honestly, there are tons. And I'm not picking any favorites. This is just the first ones that kind of come to my mind. But, you know, there's a company we work with internationally called Essity. Essity provides sanitation products, so like paper towels. They manage bathrooms at large facilities like Wembley Stadium and places like that. So you're like, huh, how's a sanitation company a software company? Well, they used to, and all of us have been to airports and like large venues, and you'll see this, you know, checklist or list posted at the door, which has the times people go through. You know, the way the process would be is like every hour or every 2 hours, someone would go by and just check things. Well, that's not very efficient. What if one place is heavily visited and another place is not visited at all? So now it's all sensor-based. There's IoT sensors across these bathrooms tracking what's being used, what's not being used. And now they can use software to inform, go here 3 times an hour and don't go to the other ones. So in doing so, it's all driven by software now, and they can actually have better, cleaner facilities with fewer human beings. So it's a lot more efficient and better. And that's a great example of how they're becoming a software company. I think another great example, and this is probably more of a COVID example, but it relates to a lot of businesses, is the company Bright Horizons. They do daycares. Mm-hmm. But obviously there was a period where their customers could not drop off their kid at daycare. So what did they do? They pivoted or switched and really added home health care. Okay, I need someone to come to my home. Well, that's a very different service. That's a different application. So they had to develop a whole new suite of software applications to serve those customers all digitally. So I think those are like two interesting examples of companies that have had to shift.
Mm-hmm. And is it that, you know, your platform is flexible enough to enable these really bespoke solutions? And if that's the case, are there folks on your team that'll work hand in hand with the customers to assist them through these projects?
Yeah. So while there are obviously a lot of differences in the industries and maybe the specific use case as far as like who the users are, et cetera, a lot of like the general use cases, like new user onboarding is a classic one. Every software application in the world has this problem. I got a new user coming in for the very first time. How do I introduce them to what's going on? Things like self-service. Okay, my user's stuck, or they can't figure out how to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. How do I deliver a self-service experience that is amazing, that reduces support costs, but at the same time delivers a high quality experience? How do I drive growth? A lot of software applications now actually sell in their software, and that could be selling from sort of a trial or free to a paid, or they could be upselling people different new offerings as well. I was talking to a bank, and a bank's doing things like, if you're coming in and activating an account and moving funds into, say, a checking or savings account, they're upselling you CDs and money market accounts, because a CD, for example, they lock you in more. And it is so much more effective when you're opening an account. It's like, hey, have you looked at our rates on CDs? You should think about that. That's, we call that a growth opportunity, which is very, very cool. So Pendo has experts in those use cases: growth, self-service, onboarding, more so than they have like banking experts or healthcare experts or retail experts. So that's kind of how we think about it. We look at it in terms of use cases. But yeah, we have expertise in how people do that. But moreover, I think one of the things that we work very hard on is connecting these companies together via a community. Like, look, if you're in a retail segment, we have a bunch of retail customers, and you're trying to, I don't know, maybe help your employees have a better experience in the software they're using, and we get three or four of those folks talking together. They're the experts of their business. Look, I'm a software guy. You know, I've been in tech my whole career. I've not been in retail my whole career. So how do we get these folks that are like-minded together to solve those problems together?
Mm-hmm. And so with this community, I think I saw you throw these events, and are these like a big kind of focus of yours, like to ensure that these events and the community you're forming is, you know, really providing an extra layer of value to everyone you touch?
They are. I'd say since day one, we've been a pretty heavy events business, you know, in terms of like events being part of our overall marketing and go-to-market strategy. I mean, I'm a people person. I like talking with customers, being with customers. It actually provides a lot of energy. But then watching customers engage and learning from each other is just very, very motivating for me and the rest of our team. So yeah, we do Pendemonium once a year. It's our annual user conference. It is amazing. One of my favorite weeks of the entire year. And one of the cool things I've over the years got to witness is customers building like long-term professional relationships via our events. You know, I was talking to one of our earliest customers and champions, and he was telling me at dinner this year, I never miss a Pendemonium. I have friends that I met at this event that we see each other every year here, and that's why he comes, in addition to getting good content. But like, that's awesome. I mean, that we're just facilitating this thing. It's like, not only is it help our business, I think, but I think it's just, I mean, it obviously feels really good.
Yeah. Where does it take place and how many people attend?
So we hold Pendemonium in Raleigh, our headquarters, headquarters city, you know, well over 1,000, maybe even close to 1,500 people this year. I think we'll continue to grow that event. We host other smaller events in cities, and those events are also very well attended. We also have an event called Mind the Product, which is more product management, kind of fundamentals based. Traditionally had a North America presence in the Bay Area, and then London's its flagship event. I think we're kind of over time rethinking our strategy, at least in North America for that event, but London will still be a flagship product management festival. That's also an amazing event. That's also, I think, close to 2,000, maybe even north of 2,000 people. So yeah, it's great.
You must have an events team in-house.
Yeah, we have an incredible events team in-house. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Let's talk about your entrepreneurial journey. You know, I was looking at your career progression, and it looks like you did a little bit of both, like working at other companies, starting your own. Did you always think you would be an entrepreneur? Like, when did that kind of desire start?
No is the short answer. You know, I started working actually professionally at 14. So I worked for a bank. I was MBNA America. At the time, that bank was acquired by Bank of America and now still fuels some of its credit card portfolio. Yeah, it's a big company. I mean, I wore a suit to work at 14, 15. That gives you some context. And I loved it. I loved having an impact with technology. I liked serving customers. I liked the discipline of the culture. There's a time when I was probably 16, 17 years old where I thought I was going to be a banking executive, where I was going to have a white picket fence. And yeah, that was kind of what I expected. And then I went to college and at Carnegie Mellon, I still moonlighted for the bank. They sent me with a laptop there they got for me so I could help. And then I worked every break there. So I spent a long time. But at some point there, I realized, well, I started getting exposed to the concept of entrepreneurship, and the internet was really starting to take off. So Netscape got founded, and being at CMU, and kind of goes back to your original question, companies like Netscape recruited heavily from CMU. So I got exposed to Silicon Valley because they were trying to get us to go to Silicon Valley and move there. So I started seeing a different world that I had never been exposed to. My parents aren't entrepreneurs. You know, I had read in like high school, the classic Horatio Alger stories and things like that. But I wouldn't say that I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. But I got the first exposure to it at probably 20 when I started my first company in Pittsburgh. I dropped down to a part-time student, and the company was all around taking advantage of the momentum on the internet and leveraging my experience at a bank, specifically with databases and data of how do we internet enable all of this data that like is trapped within these corporate IT landscapes. And that was our first company. We raised capital for that business. Honestly, I knew nothing about this. I was learning every single day in the job, but I loved every single second of it. It was like exhilarating. And so I think that's probably when the entrepreneurial bug bit me, so to speak, early 2021. And look, that company did not have a successful outcome. It didn't even have a soft landing, I would say. We were going to get bought. And then the board thought we were too young to negotiate the transaction. So they hired a banker who angered the CEO that we had originally come to an agreement with and blew up the whole deal. We were then close to running out of cash. So the company pivoted to being a services company, and like my co-founder and I departed. And I mean, it was tragic. I mean, to be like 23 and like, yeah, dude, it was terrible. But, and then right after that is when another company who we've been partnering with said, hey, we'd love to hire you as like a head of product development, et cetera. Would you be open? And that's when I like took a job. So I, as you remarked, if you look at my background, I've kind of done a little bit of both. I've started companies and then worked at places, and I've started companies. Like most often when I have found myself not doing anything, my bias is to start something. Mm-hmm. And then usually when that thing, you know, depending on what the outcome is, because then my second company got bought. So then I joined that company. So yeah, I think you'll see a little bit of both, and both can be fun. Like I'm actually pro both.
What's the thing about being an entrepreneur that you like the most?
I like the fact that you're constantly learning and things are constantly changing. I actually like the pressure. And there are certain things that are existential, certainly in the early days. But I mean, creating something from nothing, I mean, it's amazing. There's nothing quite like it. And then the other thing that's really cool about it, and I think about this a lot now, even our size and scale, like, there's nothing I can go home about and complain about to my spouse that isn't my fault at some level. So there, look, no place is perfect. Pendo's not perfect, but I have no one to blame but myself for this, which is a pretty healthy thing to think about. And I mean, I can self-reflect on that all I want, but it is true that I fully have the power to change any of it. And a lot of it, you know, I can go back in time to think about decisions about how we've gotten there. But I think that's, to me, a good feeling.
And after all your years of being an entrepreneur, and that most things that happen in the company are a result of perhaps an idea you had or a strategy that you wanted to deploy, what do you think is your biggest lever? What area do you think, if you make a decision on, will have the most profound impact?
I mean, right now, this is almost a cheat of an answer, but usually executive hiring has the most impact. Hiring an amazing executive under me will cascade and have tremendous impact on the business more than any other decision I make. Because I can come up with the best idea in a meeting or the best strategy, and if it doesn't get executed, or isn't consistently executed or executed well, it will not matter at all. Like I look at a lot of our decisions, I was like, that was pretty good strategy, but we did not execute well on that. If we had, great. Like maybe it would have yielded what we had originally anticipated, but really it comes down to that. I think people overly weigh being smart and thinking some magic strategy is going to help. Like a lot of it is execution.
Yeah. And how do you identify great executives or great key hires?
Look, I think you have to be patient. I think you have to spend a lot of time with people. I think you shouldn't rush to an executive hire. I think a lot of back channel references are useful. And look, you're going to get good and bad in back channels, hopefully. Because again, we're all human. Like you back channel me, you're going to hear bad, you're going to hear good. Your job is to kind of sift through and understand, well, how does that fit with what we're looking for? and what our current team is. Because some people may be fantastic for certain environments, maybe not fantastic for yours. The other thing that we really like to do is we like to have almost like a real world working session where we bring an exec in and say, like, let's work through this problem. It's not like I'm like asking to do work for Pendo. I'm not. I'm asking them to work together and like, let's have a session where it feels like we're working together, working on the same problem. And how does the interaction happen? How direct are they with me? Or even like our CFO, our CFO's in there with me. So like, I think those are the kinds of things that really, really help.
What was your toughest moment as an entrepreneur?
Toughest moment as an entrepreneur. Look, I think I got a bunch. You know, I think the first one I mentioned when I was like 23, 24, especially given my age. Now, the pro of being that young is that, you know, I didn't have family, I didn't have kids. Like, it only affected me. So that way, probably less stress than it could have been. But man, I felt like a failure, and that does not feel good. Second company I started, you know, had a situation with a co-founder. Very, very hard. Very, very, very hard. I was down for months and very, very difficult time in my life. I did get that company sold, but it was a slog. I mean, it took me, it was terrible. It's 2008. Like, worst time to do anything.
Right.
It did not feel good. Pendo, worst days. Contextually, we've been, you know, cross my fingers. We've had it, you know, probably better than either of those two companies. Yeah, there have been some tougher times. Like, I've made mistakes around, you know, certain hires, or in the early days of the company, raising capital was particularly hard and stressful. I was actually just telling a story pretty recently because some important person was in the press recently who I tried to raise money from and failed. And in the early days of Pendo, I won't name the name, but I remember like day after Christmas taking like a 2-hour train ride and like, you know, I had a sinus infection. Like, those are the days that you just don't ever forget as an entrepreneur. And I thought I had this deal locked up and then I didn't. I mean, yeah, not a great feeling. And it led to sort of a follow-on transaction for our seed round, which ultimately we would not be talking if I didn't do that. But I think at the time it was a harder conversation, a little more stressful. So I think those are the things that I always joke, that was the hardest round to raise in Pendo history. And it was in January of 2015. So we don't think about it a lot now, but boy, at the time, boy, it was hard. So people were asking me to move to the Bay Area. I didn't want to. So a variety of things were going on.
What's the best insight or advice that you could give to another entrepreneur who is kind of going through their journey? Maybe they're not in the clear yet, you know, they're really struggling and still trying to make everything work. What kind of advice would you give them?
A couple things. One, I'm like, getting culture right is so important. And it's a lot of technical people, engineers like myself, don't always value things like culture because we consider them fluffy or like people related things. Like, my first company, we had like strong core values. My second company, we didn't. And I don't know, maybe I just, you know, I did it the first time, but for some reason didn't think to do it second time. Like, yeah, it affected the outcome. I absolutely believe not having values was part of one of the challenges we had as a business. And so Pendo, of course, we've done that. The other part of our culture that we've had since day one here is a culture of like discipline and cadence. And I learned this along the way from some of the companies I've worked at, but like regular planning sessions. Like we, this week was our exec planning session. We do it every quarter. We've done it every quarter since 2014. You can run your watch by how we run the company. It is as tight as it could be. It doesn't matter what the week is, isn't what's going on. Like, and I'm a big believer in that level of predictability around our activities. Cause like, again, discipline, behaviors precede results. And you may not be seeing the results, but keep doing the behaviors. Do not give up. So I think that's like the first insight. And I think it really, it's how we run the company. And then the second big piece is obsessing over product market fit. You look at the great companies we're talking about, great product market fit can hide so many problems, can fix so many ills, can cure even so many cultural things. Like, there's just some products that are like the only solution. You know, I think, you know, Peter Thiel in like 0 to 1 talks about being a monopoly sort of, and I know that's sort of a loaded word, but the word aside, he, like, the crux of it is try to be so good that you're the only solution someone can pick for a certain problem. Like, obsessing over that, boy, yeah, it really, really, really matters. So I think that to me is something that I would obsess over getting right. So that's a mixture of it's great product, highly differentiated. Be the only choice for your customer base. Like that's a great way to win. It's not easy. I'm not trying to say that it is, but like that, if you can get it, it's so, so key.
You know, one thing that comes up with entrepreneur conversations is like focus. And when you talk about like to be the only solution, have you ever run into situations where you had a bunch of different ideas and it was tempting to try other things rather than stay focused on the original kind of product or intention? Do you run into that?
Yeah, all the time. I'm an entrepreneur. I want to build everything. So I see little things here. Let's try this. Let's try that. I mean, and we run experiments. Like the thing we'll do, if I have an itch that I want scratched, we'll try to run an inexpensive experiment to see is it going to be worth the effort? So yeah, I think you got to be brutal in your prioritization, of course. Doesn't mean you don't want to try new things. So we started a second product line a few years ago, but we had part of our cadence. Every year, we're going to talk about 3 to 5 year bets. Every year. Mm-hmm. Same meeting, same month. Talked about 3 to 5 year bets and how we're progressing against them. Because look, at the end of the day, we're a growth company. And eventually our current products will somehow, slow down at some point, and we're going to need more products to continue helping us drive growth. So as soon as you start talking about them and evaluating, you won't be caught flat-footed when you're like, oh my gosh, what happened? Like things started to slow. Like we don't ever want that to occur. So How do you let that occur? You constantly talk about it, think about it, run experiments in it. But I think but again, it's part of the discipline.
All right. Final two questions. One is, can you tell us about a person who has a profound influence on you?
Okay, it's not one person, or maybe you can go to like the CEO of this company, but that first bank that I worked for, they had a slogan of think of yourself as the customer. And then they had metrics tied to it, which everyone was bonused against, which like you could see the power of like good metrics aligning to comp and driving a culture. And one of them was a 2-ring pickup. And this is back in the day when everyone had desk phones, but they wanted no one to ever have to hear more than 2 rings when they called anyone at the bank. 2 rings. I would watch people dive across desks to pick up a phone. And it was like, that wasn't a rare occurrence. That happened. So when you're like 15 years old and you see people diving across desks to pick up a phone, that has an impact on you. And then like the impact of customer, the impact of good incentives, the like impact of a culture fueled by customer, I think is huge, huge impact on me. Yeah.
Excellent. Last question. Can you tell us about a charity cause or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
Look, I've got 6 kids. And so education is probably my biggest sort of like charity endeavor. So, and that could be everything from STEM education. I think we don't go back early enough to get more young people enthusiastic about technology. So it's something that, including folks from diverse backgrounds, and we got to go back farther to really address some of these issues. And within education too, I think, or maybe adjacent to it, I think mental health is also an area where it's, we have as a country continue to reduce our investment there. And it's I think the root cause of a lot of challenges we're seeing in society. I think we need to do something to reverse that trend.
Excellent. Well, Todd, I want to thank you for taking the time. This has been a wonderful conversation.
No, thank you.